Welcome to the wisdom and wit of Father Matthew Guckin. Over the years, Father Matthew Guckin has produced many wonderful teaching series, and we are delighted to showcase a number of them for you. On today's broadcast, an episode from his series on the Gospel of Matthew. Here's Father Guckin.
Hello, Father Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks a lot for the opportunity to come back and talk to the good people who are listening to this about the Gospel of St. Matthew.
Yes.
The first of the four Gospels.
I'm getting good feedback, and thank you for coming back.
Yeah, you're
and,
welcome.
We completed the Gospel of St. John, and I've been talking it up and hyping it up and sending reminders to people, and they're enjoying it.
Yeah, that's what the Pope told me last week. I was talking to him, and he's like, he said you have to just clean it up a little bit around chapter 19, but other than that, and he winked at me and gave me a skull cap, so I'm very grateful. Could you imagine?
Father, I see you're in fine fettle and fine form.
he winked at me. Could you imagine the Pope winking at you?
Yeah. You're doing it. You got the,
you got the thumbs up.
Good job there,
yeah.
Father Guckin.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'm glad he's affirming you in your priesthood.
You know, it's funny you say that. That, in a certain sense, that is the job of the Pope. When you look at St. Peter's, the art and architecture of Peter's in the dome of St. Peter's, it's a quote that goes around at the top
of the
dome.
Yes, I've seen pictures and I've been there. Yeah.
And what it's saying is it's quoting from the gospel, Jesus saying to Peter, you must strengthen your brothers.
Mm.
You know, so in a sense, that is the role.
Yes.
That is the role of the, of the Pope,
yes.
Papa. So, yeah, but it's good
well,
to be here. And I'm looking forward to reviewing a little bit of chapter one, what we talked about last time, and and then getting into chapter two here.
Okay. Well, why don't you kind of go back and retrospect on the...
So the last time we talked about Matthew, you know, who he was a tax collector. In my opinion, it's the clearest of all the Gospels, but it must, I might be a bit biased because of the name. It was written between 60
Sorry,
and
folks.
70 AD,
yeah.
You know, some scholars say. Matthew took the Gospel to Ethiopia, where he was martyred. A big theme, if you will, I hate to use that word when we're talking about God, but the gospel is Matthew's use of the kingdom of heaven, which is used 32 times in the gospel. So that notion of kingship. And then we unpacked a little bit. I did my best to unpack the genealogy that sort of is the dominant characteristic of that first chapter of Matthew's gospel. And now we move on to chapter two and some themes to, I think, pay attention to as we go forward. I mean, as I've said a million times before, we could probably spend, you know, a semester just on chapter two and going through it. We don't have the time for that. I'll be honest with you, I don't have the skill set for that. My command of Greek is, I don't have a command of Greek.
Okay. But you know some Greek. You know more than I do, probably.
Yeah,
yes.
Probably.
From your training.
Yeah, exactly.
And Latin.
Probably more Greek than Latin. I'm a little bit better at. But so I'm going to pick out a few things which I think are important. Talk about Bethlehem in this and the Magi. Talk briefly about Herod and the flight into Egypt, and then the return to Nazareth. And then I'm going to talk about the hidden life of Christ to bring it all up. But I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, thanks, sure. Father Matt. Okay, Father Matt, let's launch into chapter 2 of the Gospel of St. Matthew, the visit of the wise men. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, "For so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will govern my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him." When they had heard the king, they went their way. And lo, the star which they had seen in the east went before them, till it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. And they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. They escaped to Egypt. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there till I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child, to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt have I called my son." The massacre of the infants. Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, was in a furious rage, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem, and in all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time when he had ascertained from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. "A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing in loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they were no more." The return from Egypt. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, "Rise, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead." And he rose and took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus reigned over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there, and being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee. And he went and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that what was spoken by the prophets might be fulfilled, "He shall be called a Nazarene."
The Gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God.
So there's two cities here that we see, and then a country. Bethlehem mentioned 4 or 5 times early on, and then this movement toward into Egypt, and then this movement out and settling in Nazareth. So this, Dave, when you go to the whole, have you been to the Holy Land?
No, I have not.
Okay, yeah, I've been blessed to lead a number of pilgrimages.
I'm waiting
there.
For when you lead the pilgrimage over or a trip over.
I just did.
Okay, when's the next one? I know your planning cycle is like every 3 years or something.
Yeah, I typically
that's for parish missions.
Typically we do that. I haven't determined. You know, what's interesting is as I get older, it gets harder to do. I mean, the pilgrimage is brutal. Not brutal, but it's just draining, I should say.
Taxing, yes.
But one of the things they bill the Holy Land as is the geography of the Holy Land is the fifth gospel. Because when you understand the geography, it just adds to your understanding of who Jesus is, what he did, and how God works. You know, so I'm going to get into some geography here because I think it can be helpful.
Okay,
to us in understanding this.
That is helpful in previous readings, you know.
For sure. And these are, you know, these are concepts, especially as we get closer to Christmas, you know, that we hear and sometimes we take for granted, like a little town of Bethlehem and then Nazareth, but in between this flight into Egypt. So first of all, we note, and, you know, we all know that Christ Jesus was born in Bethlehem. So where is Bethlehem? Bethlehem's about 6 miles south of the city of Jerusalem. The word Bethlehem literally means the house of bread. And so, it should sort of grab our attention and point us toward the Eucharist. It's very Eucharistic. Mm-hmm. And then as we find out, I believe in Luke's gospel, it was laid in a manger, which comes from the French word manger. The Italians would say mangia, mm-hmm. so to eat. So so he is bread for the life of the world. So we get that right off the top of chapter 2 of the gospel. The second thing about it is that the prophet Micah, in his prophecy, chapter 5, verse 2, he had prophesied that a great ruler would come from Bethlehem. Sometimes we get the cards and watch the movies and, we think about the birth of Christ. We're easily led to think that he was born in a stable, whereas Justin Martyr, one of the early fathers of the church, really, I think, was the first to say that he was born in a cave. And I know when we go there, the scholars take us on trips to a cave in the town of Bethlehem, and it's definitely not the place where Christ was born, but it gives us an idea.
Why did they do that again?
I think because that was at the time mm-hmm. of Christ, there just weren't many stables, mm-hmm. right? And so now the actual spot of Christ's birth, they have that pretty much.
It's known.
It's known, to be sure. And that tradition really accounts for that. Here is the spot of Christ's birth. This other group, again, this is going to seem a little bit, but just for the sake of structure, a little bit of maybe disoriented. But I'm going to jump ahead now to the Magi. Mm-hmm. I always say the first international men of mystery, the Magi.
Mm-hmm.
very mysterious. Mm-hmm. These wise men from the East. Where from the East?
Exactly.
Is it Persia? Is it China?
Yeah.
Is it Jersey City?
They don't know. Yes, there are many theories.
Yeah, there's why. And also, I don't get into this in just a little bit, but I may as well get into it now. We always say there's three, and only because we associate it with the three gifts that are brought. Some traditions say there are nine. Just tradition that, mm-hmm. that tells us mm-hmm. that. But so who were the Magi? They were skilled in philosophy and medicine and astrology. We say that there's three, but other traditions hold to other numbers. And the reason, as I mentioned, we say there's three is because of the three gifts that are brought forward of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. There's a tradition which many of us in the West are familiar with, and that is the actual naming of them: Melchior, Balthazar, and Casper, right? Mm-hmm. I know what you're thinking. The ghost, right? No. Yes, you are.
I was.
Exactly.
You talked me into it, Father.
The tradition, when you dig down into the legend a little bit, we can give it the benefit of the doubt, you dig down into the legend, Melchior mm-hmm. is an old man who brings gold, and gold is the most precious of metals, fit for a king. Then you have Balthazar, who is a middle-aged man who brings myrrh, which is used for embalming someone's death. And then the ever-friendly Casper, who's young, mm-hmm. who brings frankincense, which is for the priesthood of Christ. And I think it's important for us maybe at this time just to go a little bit deeper into what a priest is, because we find priests in other religions and in cultures. What just the essence of a priest in general. And a priest is that conduit where people go to the priest to get to God. God goes to the priest through the priest to get to the people, mm-hmm. right? And so Christ is a priest, mm-hmm. A mediator, a bridge builder. That's mm-hmm. what the Latin word pontifex means. Someone who, that's what a pope is. The mm-hmm. the pontiff is a bridge builder, the conduit between
A thoroughfare.
Humanity.
A two-way thoroughfare.
Yeah, and you can see that's, and I think when you dig down into that, you see it's very hard to do that, you know, I sometimes think, I know people, you know, they have an image of a priest or in particular me. Well, they think you're this or they think you're that. You want to know who I am? Go talk to my sister Janice. Mm. You know, talk to my brother John. They'll tell you who I am. Mm-hmm. There's, you know,
what are their numbers, Father? I couldn't say that was a softball, yeah. Father.
they just kidding. You know, they sometimes people say, well, this came up in a class I was teaching recently in our parish. Mm. Well, you know, you're this or you're the church or blah 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 blah. And I said back to the class, like, you know, people may see me like that, but I don't see myself mm-hmm. like that. I see myself as a ham and egger. I see myself as somebody who grew up in Mayfair on Farnsworth mm-hmm. Street, just an ordinary human being, flawed, as anyone else, if not more so. So, but for whatever reason, I'm a priest. I'm that go-between, and it makes sense when you think back on the priest that God has chosen. And I mean, Moses. I mean, it's almost one of the great ironies in history. Mm-hmm. See, God chooses Moses to be his mouthpiece, and Moses has a stuttering problem.
Exactly.
It's like you can't make it up.
I'm just right? You can't make this stuff up.
So that, mm-hmm. but that's what a priest mm-hmm. is, and that's what the gifts represent. Yeah. And now, Dave, you're welcome. I would just say a word about, because I don't want to overlook it because he plays such a central role in this chapter, a word about King Herod, mm-hmm. you know. I just want to speak briefly about this, that first of all, he tries to kill Jesus. You know, this is not behavior that is unlike anything Herod had done. I think he had 10 wives mm-hmm. and he killed half of them. So it's very in keeping with his character mm-hmm. to be murderous. So he tries to kill Jesus. We know that he kills the innocents in Bethlehem. So we celebrate on December 28th the Feast of the Holy Innocents.
Innocence, yes.
Right. And the thing I want to just talk ever so briefly on in Herod is this. I was thinking of Herod as I was putting this together. He's so into himself, Dave, yeah. that he misses Christ. You know, and I think...
Could you expand that?
Sure.
How so?
Yeah. I mean, he's so into his own power mm-hmm. and the perceived threat of Christ that he can't enjoy Christ. Think of being on the boardwalk mm-hmm. in the summertime. Mm-hmm. You know, he might be so into the rides or the games in Ocean City or whatever that you miss... The grandeur and ability to delight mm-hmm. in the ocean.
Yes.
Well, this is infinitely worse that Herod can't even appreciate. So he's so into himself, he's so insecure that he's such a narcissist.
I was going to use that word, but
yeah.
I waited for you. No, really.
That's
classical narcissism.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't have used that language back in the day, but I mean, it is classic. That he misses, what, mm-hmm. and I think in a certain sense, not nearly to the degree of Herod, but that's what we do. We're guilty yeah. of the same thing.
Oh, like, yes.
Well, we're interested in getting our opinion across, or well, what does Christ say? Mm-hmm. You know, that wristband that people sometimes use, WWJ. Well, what would Jesus do? How about this? What would Jesus think? What would Jesus mm-hmm. say? What do you think Jesus, you know, it's about, and he misses that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's consigned to narcissism.
Choice, in a way. That's his way of being.
Yeah, and I guess it was, you know, his habits of life. But I mean, 10 wives and killed 5 of mm-hmm. them, that's pretty...
That's pretty brutal.
Indeed. So that's all I want to say about mm-hmm. Herod.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And then there's the flight into Egypt, which happens to be one of the 7 sorrows of Mary. Yeah, the flight into Egypt. But, and I want to first talk about how they got there, and that is Joseph was warned in a dream. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, I've said this in homilies sometimes, and I'm always hesitant because the line of people who gather after this, when you talk about dreams, it's deep. It better be at the 12 o'clock mass that I mentioned it because people want to talk about it. But I do think that God speaks to us in any way he darn well pleases. And I do think one of them is in dreams. In dreams, our defenses come down and the mind is free to roam. And I think it's sort of fertile ground for the Lord to speak to us. My sister Janice, whom I mentioned just a moment ago, she has a daughter, Brianna, who had childhood diabetes. And my sister woke up one time. She had a dream when Brianna was little. And the dream was that Brianna had gone into a diabetic coma.
Wow.
And she woke up and ran down the hall. She was a little baby, Brianna. And sure enough, she was about to slip into a diabetic coma. So, you know, I think the Lord was...
The Holy Spirit.
Yeah, I mean, came to my sister in a dream. Well, Father,
you were saying a dream. So, I mean, would they be considered a theophany or a different type of manifestation of the work of the Lord?
Yeah, I think, I don't know what...
Like an outward sign to humans.
I think the thing is, like, the Lord works in a variety of ways. What I think we have to be careful of doing is saying, oh, yeah, this is without this, I'm infallibly correct on this. Like, I believe, in my opinion, that the Lord has done that in my own life, you know, to work through dreams in this case, I think definitely in my sister's life. And so I don't think it should come as a surprise that Joseph is warned how in a dream to go to Egypt. Mm-hmm. And you have to know, too, at that time that there were colonies of Jews who were in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would not have been going to a place where they would find no welcome whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So they go down there. And then after a time, again, they're called out of Egypt, you know, when things were safer. But rather than going to Bethlehem, when they go back, they go to Nazareth, right? And
another dream. And by another dream, they were notified. You know, that was the main mode of messaging.
Yeah.
Like now you can now go to Israel.
Yeah, go back. And go to Nazareth, right? At the time, you know, Nazareth, and I've been to Nazareth as well. I've not been to Egypt, but I've been to Nazareth as well. And so Nazareth is north by about 120 miles, give or take, of Bethlehem. So it's in the northern part of Israel. And yet the southern part of the Galilee region. Oh. Galilee's a region. Think of the Sea of Galilee, and it's in the southern part of the Galilee.
Okay.
At the time, it was considered a backwater, Nazareth. However, if you go to the highest summit of Nazareth and you just take a panorama of Nazareth, to the west, you see the Mediterranean with all the ships running north and south upon the ocean blue, if you will. If you look down, but still toward the west, you see a road that goes from Damascus to Egypt. So along the coast, it's the coastal route. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you see caravans going up and down. So this is what Jesus would have seen as a young boy going up to the top.
I'm visualizing this.
Yeah, I think it's important, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you look east, so if you do a 180 and look east, you see another road. And that is the road toward what would have been called in a different time, toward the Orient.
Yes.
Right, with all of its spices and silks going back and forth being traded to
major
the eastern part.
Route.
Yeah, these are all of them, right?
Yes.
Whether it's by sea or by land, the eastern part of the Roman Empire. So what Nazareth gave Christ as a young boy was the gateway to the whole world. So even though it's a backwater, Dave, you know, considered by many, you know, really what Jesus as a young boy is seeing is he's seeing the whole world, you know,
all
coming and going,
him.
Right? All yeah. right before him, exactly. Mm-hmm. So so I think there's that's a different way for us to look at Nazareth. Chapter 2 ends with Jesus in Nazareth. Chapter 3 of Matthew's gospel begins with Jesus all grown up, which is what I want to just talk briefly about. Yeah, there was a priest I heard give a homily one time. Whenever the baptism of Jesus is, the feast of the baptism of Jesus, we celebrate it like the feast of the Holy Family. And then a week later, he's getting baptized. And I heard the priest say, I forget who it was, but he said, boy, they say kids grow up quick these days, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah, really. Yeah,
you know?
Yes.
But we do find them at the beginning, which we're not going to get into in this session, but at the beginning.
1 minute they're little and next
yeah,
they're grown.
You yeah. know,
yeah.
Where did time go?
Where did time go?
But I want to talk very briefly about these years in between. In between, if you will, chapter 2 and chapter 3. Like, what is it? Because I think they're really important. And Catholics for millennia now have meditated upon, you know, the so-called hidden life of our Lord. But the hidden life is most of his life. It's about...
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Right? It's about 95% of his life. If
exactly.
our, you know, like
yeah.
we're talking from boyhood to the age of 30. He only lived for 33 years on earth. So it's about 95% of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So wait a second. This is our Messiah. This is the one whom we study and adore and follow, you know, like, and worship. Well, wait a minute. 95%, like, modern historians would reject that out of hand. Like, we need to, well, actually, in a certain sense, even the church does when we look to canonize somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if 95% of a cause was missing, I think they probably
yes.
pumped the brakes on that. Like,
I agree with it. I was going to say, well, that look at all the research. Still, I mean, from the historians, in the church. I mean, they're still looking. Right?
So what happened? Well, we're going to make some assumptions
mm-hmm.
on what happened here, and I think they're reasonable.
Okay.
First of all, he was reared. He was raised, if you will, by his mother and his father. I'm going to presume that he worked with his dad, right, as a carpenter, right? As a matter of fact, that's one of the slurs that's used against our Lord. Is this not the carpenter's son?
Yes.
Right? And so, right, it's a beautiful painting that I've seen of St. Joseph's shop, you know, where the young Jesus is mm-hmm. like handing his dad yeah. a saw or something. That's kind of cool.
I hear that, hey, kid, hand me that saw. Or,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Hey, Jesus, I need that over there.
Yeah, exactly. Get me the lathe.
Yeah.
You know, I said lathe, not saw.
Yeah.
He was taught by his mother, right? He accepted the simple duties of home and, in a sense, prepared him for his greater duties, right? I know when we're young, you know, like Hollywood, the road to Hollywood is just littered with broken dreams. You know, everyone wants to be a star, but
isn't there a similar thing that the road to hell is paved with good intentions or something?
I think.
Well,
one,
I thought the one like Hollywood too.
I think one can sadly equate.
Well,
much of how sad, but I mean, I'm,
yeah, I didn't mean to make that
yeah.
deep,
but I mean, there's, okay, everyone wants to be, you know, the next Tom Cruise.
Well, really? And there are, and Hollywood does put out some really fine stuff. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, from brilliant people who, that's their calling.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. But here, you know, what we find at the home in Nazareth is Jesus learning how to be faithful in little duties to prepare him for the greater duties, right, that he would assume as the Messiah. I think more than anything, though, Dave, what this does, this 95% of his life does, is it reminds us, whether working with his father, being taught by his mother, it reminds us once again that Jesus Christ identifies with humanity. And I think there is really the allure of Jesus. Like, we have a God who gets it.
Yeah.
Right?
He's real.
Not above us.
Yeah.
Not above us. You think of when the French Revolution was ramping up and Marie Antoinette found out that the peasants were starving. There was no bread. Legend tells us, she said, well, let them eat cake. Mm-hmm. There's no identification with us. But that's the charm of Jesus Christ, is that he identifies us with us in all of our human needs, we could do a class here just on the humanity of Christ, how he was hungry, how he sighed.
We can do that.
How he said, it would actually probably be pretty good for me to just come through.
Well, I'm serious. No, I mean, I'm not making light of it. I mean, there's so much richness that many roads we could go down.
I think if I'm going to do that level of work, I'm going to want to make some money off of that. So, I mean, your smile. Yeah, exactly. So, here we have Jesus identifying with humanity, kind of thing. So, yeah. There is one thing I would like to talk about, too, is because I'm not even sure I glossed over it, is one. It's and it has to do with when the Holy Family was going down into Egypt. Now, this is a legend. I don't mind legends. I love legends, right? The legend of King Arthur.
Yes.
I remember reading that in high school. Mm-hmm. But it's a legend which I think is really cool. And that is to say, the Holy Family on the way to Egypt sought shelter in a cave. Mm-hmm. And Herod's men were in pursuit of them. And a spider saw... Have you heard this before?
I think I've heard this someplace.
A spider saw the baby Jesus and wove a web over the entrance of the cave to protect the baby Jesus. And when the soldiers came to the cave, they saw it and thought, we can't be in here. There's a spider web with glistening dew on it. Mm-hmm. And so they passed over. And so the spider... But I don't know if you know this, Dave. Like, that's why we put tinsel on Christmas trees. That the tinsel is meant to remind us of Christ, and Christ being protected by the spider when Herod's men were in hot pursuit of him. Isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah, that is very cool. Yeah. I think we're going to need to kind of bring this to an end.
Okay,
thank you again for coming in.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's this is good. I hope it's good for the people who are listening. I know it's good for me. I mean, just to go back. First of all, it's always healthy to think of Christmas.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It's just such a special time, a divine time. And unfortunately, when you get to actual Christmas time, it's so much hustle and bustle. There's very little time to sit back and think of this. But
so
thanks.
Now's a good time, ladies and gentlemen.
Dave,
about Christmas.
And Merry
it
Christmas.
Is coming up.
Merry Christmas.
Advent is in our not too far away.
Yeah. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, Father Matt, thank you for coming in.
And, you're welcome.
And doing the second chapter of the Gospel of St. Matthew. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Thank you for joining us for the Gospel of Matthew with Father Matthew Guckin on Holy Spirit Radio. Thank you.